Instead of registering and receiving a draft card and getting a physical, in the 18th century, enlisting conscripts was done through music and song, drinking and dancing at taverns or crossroads, luring the lads who would land in service to the empire. The Imperial Army recruiters traveled across the country and they engaged small instrumental Roma, or what might have been known then as gypsy bands. The music they played became known as the Verbunkos, from the German verb werben, to recruit. These melodies were often based on simple folk songs interpreted in a very ornamental style. The most prominent interpreter and composer of the Verbunkos was Janos Bihari, a self-taught Roma violin virtuoso. Bihari is credited as the author of the famous Rakoczy March, based on Kuritz themes and transcribed later by Franz Liszt and Hector Berlioz. Janos Bihari even played through the entire Congress of Vienna in 1814. Since Verbunkos were in vogue with the nobility, Bihari's talent and popularity allowed him to lead a wealthy lifestyle for a time, and even though a hand injury somewhat decreased his popularity, he ended up dying in poverty. Still, masses of people attended his funeral. Franz Liszt actually wrote a book trying to explain the importance of the Verbunkos to contemporary composition, particularly its savage virtuosity, as he put it. Liszt thought he was doing things right when he adapted the Verbunkos, and he took to task past transcribers who tried to correct what seemed wrong to them in the true Verbunkos sound, saying they had missed the opportunity to discover new kinds of unknown beauty. Theoretical rules that applied to serious Western music, in his mind, were simply in the way, as in certain cases, the beautiful can only be beautiful if it's freed from certain made-up rules. That from Shay Loya's study, Liszt's Transcultural Modernism. We'll have a chance to immerse ourselves in this strange and wonderful beauty that classical composers in their time, under the influence of these folk traditions, created in the opening concert of the 2019-2020 season of the Northeastern Pennsylvania Philharmonic. In a fascinating way, Mélisse Brunet, interim music director and conductor, and the musicians of the orchestra will help us feel these rhythms and hear these melodic delights deeply as a result of her first-hand experience of the rich Hungarian tradition. They'll all be filling our ears with the joys of Mozart, and they'll bring us a much-loved piano concerto by Schumann with a great pianist who is becoming a much-loved figure on the northeastern Pennsylvania music scene. As it happens, we have a Schumann footnote that's fun, though not directly related to the concert program, does show the extent of the Hungarian influence across Europe. We're told Schumann encountered and composed music that simulated gypsy music throughout his career. In his diary and letters, he said he loved Schubert's work in the Hungarian style, a veritable catalog of Hungarian gypsy musical idioms. Though he never mentioned it in his diary or letters, Schumann would likely have encountered Verbunkos music during his 1838 and 1846 visits to Vienna, and we hear the Hungarian influence in his own violin fantasy. Well, we won't be hearing that, but we'll be hearing music of Schumann and Mozart and Kodály and Franz Liszt. And that's the opening concert of the Northeastern Pennsylvania Philharmonic under Mélisse Brunet, and it will take place this Saturday, October 12th, at the Kirby Center for Creative Arts at Wyoming Seminary in Kingston. We had a chance to speak by phone with Mélisse Brunet about the theme of the program titled Inspired by the Human Spirit and how she came to it.
I'm a very passionate person, and I'm a lot about emotions and close to my instincts person, so it's definitely a theme here that is about passion and emotion regarding the masterworks. And the second masterwork is going to probably be more known for our audience because it's going to be all Tchaikovsky program, which is extremely romantic, of course. And the first program, however, might be more of a discovery for our audience in the way that both pieces are not often put together, and some of them are not often performed. But I was very lucky in my life to work with a lot of Hungarian people, and that has had me discover also all the emotion and passion in their music that I thought would be a really great thing to expose our audience to.
Was that in school, Melis, or as fellow musicians?
It was at the Paris Conservatoire, so my teacher there was a Hungarian man, Zsolt Noy, and we went to conduct a lot of professional orchestras in Hungary. That's what students did at the Paris Conservatoire, so we traveled a lot in Jean Bataille to conduct an orchestra there, and on my own I did also some traveling in Hungary, but I worked with real Hungarian musicians and got to discover their tradition. And their music and their personalities. And it was, I worked also with Peter Udvös later on, who is, of course, a great composer and conductor. So I'm really happy that I got to discover their roots.
To what extent is the language and the rhythm of the language related to the music? Not to generalize, but is there a relationship, Melis?
Erika, you're so good. We cannot hide anything from you. Yes, there is a deep relationship between the language and the music. The Hungarian language is a very different language from all the countries around Hungary. And they have an accent on the first part of the word. So if I say my name, for example, Melis, in France, we would say Melis. In Hungary, they would say Melis. So it would be Melis, you know, and therefore we find those rhythms a lot in Hungarian music, like papam, papam, starting that it's transposed directly from their language.
And then they make it their own in terms of the emotion which you talk about, of course.
Yes, and that's really interesting emotions because Hungarian people and Hungarian music, we often think when we listen to the second Hungarian Rhapsody number 2 by Liszt, like it's very emotional, or the Galanda Dances by Kodály is very emotional. But Hungarian people are very proud people, and they like things that are really straightforward and things that are very squared. So, for example, it's interesting to know that Zsoltán Kodály wanted for the performers to really respect his rhythms. And us as Western musicians, you know, we have a tendency to, like, give some groove or slow down some of the rhythms, not to be very accurate. But Hungarian people are very, very accurate in terms of rhythms. They are very serious about respecting what they wrote on the page.
And, for example, with a piece like The Dances, is there a folk influence? Is it something that Kodály created himself in terms of those folk rhythms, those folk flavors, or were there some real tunes?
So there are real tunes. And actually, Kodály, when he was a little kid, went to the city of Galanta, that at that point was in Hungary, and traveled, I think he stayed about like 7 years there, traveled there for 7 years and came back. And there was that group of musicians and gypsies, you know, and he was really, really impressed by their music. And that's what was staying in his memory. And later on in the 1930s, he heard of someone who had collected those tunes from the end of the 18th, beginning of the 19th, and he found that book and used some of the melodies in that piece, the Galanta Dances.
And what about Liszt?
Yeah, so, you know, we start with the Liszt and we end with the Kodály, and of course they are both Hungarian composers at different times, because the Hungarian Rhapsody is way earlier in time, written in 1847, when the Galanta Dances were written in 1933. So we have like almost 100 years in between those pieces. However, they have in common that, of course, they are written by Hungarian composers, but also they use the style of what we call ferbunkos, which was a music that was used to recruit soldiers. When the conscription did not exist yet, they needed ways to find soldiers, and they created that style of music, the ferbunkos, and this is how those two pieces are linked, because they use the language of the ferbunkos recruiting soldiers through dancing, which is kind of exciting when you think about it.
Do you get moving up there as you are on the podium when you're trying to convey for an orchestra who may not have spent as much time as you have in Hungary and surrounded by Hungarian performers and Hungarian music? Does that help you get some sense of the rhythm across?
Oh, definitely, yes. Yes, so the way you feel it in your body is going to be very helpful for the musician to understand where you go. Of course, each conductor, someone could be very stiff and still convey that. You know, it's really just what is important is that you are yourself. And myself is being very physical on the podium. So, yes, I think it's going to be pretty clear for the musicians where to go.
We know that Mozart was apparently loved in Prague, which is not Hungary, but you have Mozart on the program, and anyone who's heard us talk about your conducting will remember the story that it was because you were disappointed in being part of a performance of Mozart that spurred you on to take on conducting. How about the choice of Mozart for this concert?
Yes, so Mozart is very, very, very dear to me. And I find that this piece, the Symphony No. 35, Hafner Symphony, fits extremely well in the program. In the way that it brings variety and also somehow there is also a great spirit of jokes. You know, we are very close. I mean, all of those pieces that I have programmed are in the same geographic space, you know, with some years apart, but we are still in the same space geographically, and you can find a lot of common themes between the composers. And I thought it was really important to bring that classical spirit, the pure joy, the purity of the music also to our audience, to whom that symphony is very familiar, probably.
We do know the name Hafner associated with Mozart, not just for this symphony, but also for a serenade. The Hafner name, what does that tell us about the way Mozart was creating his works in association with perhaps patrons or the like?
Yes, yes, it's a very interesting question that is very actual in America, actually. At that time, Mozart was not an employee, so, I mean, he was not working for a company. He was working on command by private patrons. So private patrons would ask Mozart, princes or kings or the Hafners, who were a noble family, they would ask him to write a piece for, like, say, a wedding or any other important event of their life. And then Mozart would write for them. That's how he would make his living. And it worked quite well. You can imagine that it was a lot of stress because you could not say no. So you would have, like, the time when he wrote this symphony, he was extremely busy. He got asked through his father, because his father was also very close to the Hafner family, and he could not say no. So he had to do that on top of many other things. And it was a life that was very, very, very stressful for composers. Nowadays, it's still very stressful, but for different reasons. At that time, they had to write so much music so quickly and without the chance to be late on any deadlines, you know. That was very tricky.
You were talking about the emotions in this masterwork season and the joy that we know from Mozart and so on. What kinds of ways, choice of key, tempo, how does a composer like Mozart give us emotion in a piece like this? What kinds of things will we be paying attention to?
I am the kind of person to let my feelings speak. So I would really encourage the audience to go there with an open mind and relax and just enjoy, you know, rather than trying to analyze what's happening. I think that sit back and enjoying the emotions, we are doing the work here for you. So we are, you know, playing the music and we are bringing all of these emotions. So just sit back, listen, and let things happening in your body. You know, you're going to start thinking of some things and then being inspired by others. So I'm the kind of person who is a rather sitting back, listening and opening my mind, really, you know, opening to everything I start receiving in terms of sounds, in terms of emotions, and there can be so many of them. Then you have the musicians and you have myself doing the job for you guys.
Now, we are going to talk momentarily about your guest soloist who will be part of the Schumann, but will there be featured solos by members of the orchestra? Listen to that clarinet!
Yeah, absolutely. That's good that you mention it, because the program is very heavy for the clarinet solo. And it is so because in the Hungarian music and the Ferbunkos, you had those little groups who were gypsies, as I mentioned earlier, and basically those gypsies were little groups of, let's say, one fiddle, one double bass, one clarinet, and one cymbalum. And they would play all over that part of Europe. This is why in Liszt and Kodály, you have very huge, major solos for the clarinet. And that, of course, we also find big clarinet solos. But here, it's more for the color in the Schumann, in the piano concerto.
Audiences always love a good concerto. You could have chosen many. What do you love about the Schumann and why does it fit here?
One more time, it's in terms of making a very very strong program in which everybody is going to find different and experience different emotions. The Schumann is the only piece on the program that has so many inner feelings and probably is the most romantic piece of the entire program. So here, you know, you have the time to get back to yourself and probably experience very strong emotion through the melodies that Schumann uses and his language. That will allow you to go from something different from the Hungarian music, the Ferbunkos, to the Schumann, then to something more classical, and then back to Hungary.
And Spencer Meyer has become a friend of the orchestra. Remind our listeners about him and what he brings to town when he comes.
He's phenomenal. So last year we did the second piano concerto by Rachmaninoff with him. And I am not kidding, once he just played the last chord, the entire audience was up, applauding. You could feel the goosebumps. Even I, as a conductor, I felt it, and the musicians, everybody was so excited. He's a wonderful musician, you know, because he's not that very, shiny, show-off person. He's someone so deep and with a real, true musician about his art, and he has that very special quality of listening to the orchestra and making music together. So making music with him is just doing chamber music. It's so special, and you can feel, and the audience feels, that there is a special community, a special bonding between all of us, between the musicians, between Spencer, and with the audience.
Oh, and that's why we want to come to concerts. That's the beauty and the excitement of live music, live performing. You're in the music, you're breathing together or listening to each other and responding in the moment, one time only.
Yes, yes. And you know, you feel all of these things together, which on a recording, it's going to be a very lonely, you know, experience. But here we are all together, very chemical, so from the body, you know, on all of these hormones and the sounds and the vibration, because the vibrations you feel on the ground through your feet, you know, and in the air, the air vibrating to your ears is very, very unique to a concert.
Melis, do you like to talk to the audience at any point?
Yeah, I love to do that at all points, but not when I'm conducting. So I love to do that before the concert, and I will do a pre-concert lecture starting at 7 p.m., which is, you know, for everyone who wants to come attend it. And Spencer Meyer will be also talking at that time and answering your questions, the questions of the audience. And then after the concert, I will be heading, you know, to where the audience is outside the hall, and I will be really happy to talk with the audience members and to share some of their experience and answer some of their questions. I really, really enjoy to be part of the community and get to know all of you.
Are you at home now in the Kirby Center at Wyoming Seminary? Is that a good place to perform?
I think it's a great hall because it's very, it feels like home. There is some comfort, like we can hear each other, and there is that warmth getting out of that hall that is very precious. The acoustic is really good, and all the musicians and myself really enjoy to perform there because we can really get to a very high level of musicality there.
You know, the orchestra is so proud that you've been selected as one of the 12 candidates for the conducting competition. Would you tell us what it is and where it is and what it means?
Oh, yeah. It's the first international competition ever held for women conductors. So it's a premiere, you know. Nobody before created a competition for women conductors only. And those people who are actually based in France thought that we have an issue here because we have very little women conductors getting jobs. I believe in France it's like 4% of conductors are women. And it's kind of similar in all countries all over the world. So they were, okay, let's put together that competition only for women conductors, and it's international. So 220 conductors applied from 51 countries, and I'm surprised, I'm shocked, and I'm very happy that I've been selected to be one of the 12 finalists who will be conducting in March 2020 in Paris for this competition. So it's a very strong political stance, I think, they are sending here. And I think it's already been a great success since 220 women applied for that competition.
And it's wonderful for you to be going back and having a chance to see maybe your family while you're in France.
Yeah, to be conducting for my family and friends is going to be something very special, you know. So I'm very much looking forward to that and to discover a new orchestra and to make great music, you know. So, yeah, that's extremely exciting.
And that's what Mélisse Brunet has dedicated her career to, making great music. And she will be part of the first international competition for women conductors taking place in Paris, Monday the 16th to Thursday the 19th of March 2020. And we'll keep you posted on the developments in that field. But right now, we want to remind you that you can hear her and see her and get the results of her passion for music with the Northeastern Pennsylvania Philharmonic. She is interim music director and conductor, and the opening concert of the 2019-2020 season is titled Inspired by the Human Spirit, and it will take place this Saturday, October 12th at 8 p.m. at the Kirby Center for Creative Arts on the campus of Wyoming Seminary in Kingston, just across the river from Wilkes-Barre. The program will include this work, Liszt's Hungarian Rhapsody No. 2. Robert Schumann's Piano Concerto with soloist Spencer Meyer, Mozart's Symphony No. 35, the Haffner, and the closing work, Zoltán Kodály's Dances of Galanta. If you need more information, you can find everything you need online at nepaphil.org, nepaphil.org. It's the opening concert of a season titled Elegance and Emotion, and it will take place this Saturday, October 12th at 8 p.m. at the Kirby Center for Creative Arts at Wyoming Seminary in Kingston, the Northeastern Pennsylvania Philharmonic, under the direction of Mélisse Brunet, with guest pianist Spencer Meyer. For more information, on the web, nepaphil.org.